whom, when cries and horn blasts were heard from their scouts that went in front. Out of the darkness arrows whistled. Swiftly a scout rode back and reported that wolf riders were abroad in the valley, and that a host of orcs and wild men were hurrying southward from the fords of Isen and seemed to be making for Helm's Deep. "We found many of our folk lying slain as they fled thither," said the scout, "and we've met scattered companies, going this way and that, leaderless. What has become of Erkenbrandt none seems to know. It's likely that he'll be overtaken ere he can reach Helm's Gate, if he's not already perished." "Has aught been seen of Gandalf?" asked Théoden. "Yes, lord. Many have seen an old man in white upon a horse, passing hither and thither over the plains like a wind in the grass. Some thought he was Saruman. It's said that he went away ere nightfall towards Isengard. Some say also that Wormtongue was seen earlier, going northward with a company of orcs."
"It will go ill with Wormtongue if Gandalf comes upon him," said Théoden. "Nevertheless, I miss now both my counsellors, the old and the new. But in this need, we've no better choice than to go on, as Gandalf said, to Helm's Gate, whether Erkenbrand be there or no. Is it known how great is the host that comes from the north?"
"It's very great," said the scout. "He that flies counts every foeman twice. Yet I've spoken to stout-hearted men, and I don't doubt that the main strength of the enemy is many times as great as all that we have here."
"Then let us be swift," said Aemer. "Let us drive through such foes as are already between us and the fastness. There are caves in Helm's Deep where hundreds may lie hid, and secret ways lead thence up on to the hills."
"Trust not to secret ways," said the king. "Saruman has long spied out this land. Still in that place our defence may last long. Let us go."
Aragorn and Legolas went out now with Aemer in the van. On through the dark night they rode, ever slower as the darkness deepened and their way climbed southward, higher and higher into the dim folds about the mountain's feet. They found few of the enemy before them. Here and there they came upon roving bands of orcs, but they fled ere the riders could take or slay them.
"It won't be long, I fear," said Aemer, "ere the coming of the king's host will be known to the leaders of our enemies, Saruman or whatever captain he's sent forth."
The rumour of war grew behind them. Now they could hear, borne over the dark, the sound of harsh singing. They'd climbed far up into the deeping coombe when they looked back. Then they saw torches, countless points of fiery light upon the black fields behind, scattered like red flowers, or winding up from the lowlands in long flickering lines. Here and there a larger blaze leapt up.
"It's a great host and follows us hard," said Aragorn. "They bring fire," said Théoden, "and they're burning as they come, rick, cot, and tree. This was a rich vale and had many homesteads. Alas for my folk.
Would that day was here, and we might ride down upon them like a storm out of the mountains," said Aragorn. "It grieves me to fly before them."
"We needn't fly much further," said Aemer.
"Not far ahead now lies Helm's Dyke, an ancient trenchant rampart scored across the coombe, 2 furlongs below Helm's Gate. There we can turn and give battle."
"Nay, we're too few to defend the dyke," said Théoden.
"It's a mile long or more, and the breach in it is wide."
"At the breach our rear guard must stand if we're pressed," said Aemer.
There was neither star nor moon when the riders came to the breach in the dyke, where the stream from above passed out, and the road beside it ran down from the Hornburg. The rampart loomed suddenly before them, a high shadow beyond a dark pit. As they rode up, a sentinel challenged them.
"The Lord of the Mark rides to Helm's Gate," Aemer answered. "I, Aemer, son of Aemond, speak."
"This is good tidings beyond hope," said the sentinel. "Hasten, the enemy is on your heels."
The host passed through the breach and halted on the sloping sward above. They now learned to their joy that Erkenbrand had left many men to hold Helm's Gate, and more had since escaped thither.
"Maybe we have 1,000 fit to fight on foot," said Gamling, an old man, the leader of those that watched the dyke. "But most of them have seen too many winters, as I have, or too few, as my son's son here. What news of Erkenbrand? Word came yesterday that he was retreating thither with all that's left of the best riders of Westfold, but he's not come.
I fear that he won't come now, said Aylmer. Our scouts have gained no news of him, and the enemy fills all the valley behind us.
I would that he'd escaped, said Theoden. He was a mighty man. In him lived again the valour of Helm the Hammerhand. But we can't await him here. We must draw all our forces now behind the walls. Are you well stored? We bring little provision, for we rode forth to open battle, not to a siege. Behind us in the caves of the deep are three parts of the folk of Westfold, old and young, children and women, said Gamling. But great store of food, and many beasts and their fodder have also been gathered there.
That is well, said Aylmer. They are burning or despoiling all that is left in the vale.
If they come to bargain for our goods at Helm's Gate, they'll pay a high price, said Gamling.
The king and his riders passed on. Before the causeway that crossed the stream they dismounted. In a long file they led their horses up the ramp and passed within the gates of the Hornburg. There they were welcomed again with joy and renewed hope, for now there were men enough to man both the burg and the barrier wall. Quickly Aylmer set his men in readiness. The king and the men of his household were in the Hornburg, and there also were many of the Westfold men. But on the deeping wall and its tower, and behind it, Aylmer arrayed most of the strength that he had, for here the defence seemed more doubtful, if the assault were determined and in great force. The horses were led far up the deep under such guard as could be spared. The deeping wall was 20 feet high, and so thick that four men could walk abreast along the top, sheltered by a parapet over which only a tall man could look. Here and there were clefts in the stone through which men could shoot. The battlement could be reached by a stair running down from a door in the outer court of the Hornburg. Three flights of steps led also up onto the wall from the deep behind. But in front it was smooth, and the great stones of it were set with such skill that no foothold could be found at their joints, and at the top they hung over like a sea-delved cliff. Gimli stood leaning against the breastwork upon the wall. Legolas sat above on the parapet, fingering his bow, and peering out into the gloom.
"This is more to my liking," said the dwarf, stamping on the stones. "Ever my heart rises as we draw near the mountains. There's good rock here. This country has tough bones. I felt them in my feet as we came up from the dyke. Give me a year and 100 of my kin, and I'd make this a place that armies would break upon like water."
"I don't doubt it," said Legolas, "but you're a dwarf, and dwarves are strange folk. I don't like this place, and I shall like it no more by the light of day. But you comfort me, Gimli, and I'm glad to have you standing nigh with your stout legs and your hard axe. I wish there were more of your kin among us, but even more would I give for 100 good archers of Mirkwood. We shall need them. The Rohirrim have good bowmen after their fashion, but there are too few here, too few."
"It's dark for archery," said Gimli. "Indeed, it's time for sleep. Sleep. I feel the need of it, as never I thought any dwarf could. Riding is tiring work, yet my axe is restless in my hand. Give me a row of Orkneys and room to swing, and all weariness will fall from me."
A slow time passed. Far down in the valley, scattered fires still burned. The hosts of Isengard were advancing in silence now. Their torches could be seen winding up the coombe in many lines. Suddenly from the dyke yells and screams and the fierce battle cries of men broke out. Flaming brands appeared above the brink and clustered thickly at the breach. Then they scattered and vanished. Men came galloping back over the field and up the ramp to the gate of the Hornburg. The rear guard of the Westfolders had been driven in. "The enemy is at hand," they said. "We loosed every arrow that we had and filled the dyke with orcs. But it won't halt them long. Already they're scaling the bank at many points, thick as marching ants. But we've taught them not to carry torches." It was now past midnight. The sky was utterly dark, and the stillness of the heavy air foreboded storm. Suddenly the clouds were seared by a blinding flash. Branched lightning smote down upon the eastward hills. For a staring moment the watchers on the wall saw the space between them and the dike lit with white light. It was boiling and crawling with black shapes, some squat and broad, some tall and grim, with high helms and sable shields. Hundreds and hundreds more were pouring over the dike and through the breach. The dark tide flowed up to the walls from cliff to cliff. Thunder rolled in the valley. Rain came lashing down. Arrows thick as the rain came whistling over the battlements and fell clinking and glancing on the stones. Some found a mark. The assault on Helm's Deep had begun, but no sound or challenge was heard within. No answering arrows came. The assailing hosts halted, foiled by the silent menace of rock and wall. Ever and again the lightning tore aside the darkness. Then the orcs screamed, waving spear and sword, and shooting a cloud of arrows at any that stood revealed upon the battlements. And the men of the mark amazed looked out, as it seemed to them, upon a great field of dark corn, tossed by a tempest of war, and every ear glinted with barbed light.
Brazen trumpets sounded. The enemy surged forward, some against the deeping wall, others towards the causeway and the ramp that led up to the Hornburg gates. There the hugest orcs were mustered, and the wild men of the Dunland Fells. A moment they hesitated, and then on they came. The lightning flashed, and blazoned upon every helm and shield the ghastly hand of Isengard was seen. They reached the summit of the rock. They drove towards the gates. Then at last an answer came. A storm of arrows met them, and a hail of stones. They wavered, broke, and fled back, and then charged again, broke and charged again, and each time, like the incoming sea, they halted at a higher point. Again trumpets rang, and a press of roaring men leapt forth. They held their great shields above them like a roof, while in their midst they bore two trunks of mighty trees. Behind them orc archers crowded, sending a hail of darts against the bowmen on the walls. They gained the gates. The trees, swung by strong arms, smote the timbers with a rending boom. If any man fell, crushed by a stone hurtling from above, two others sprang to take his place. Again and again the great ram swung and crashed. Eomer and Aragorn stood together on the deeping wall. They heard the roar of voices and the thudding of the rams, and then in a sudden flash of light they beheld the peril of the gates. "Come!" said Aragorn. "This is the hour when we draw swords together." Running like fire, they sped along the wall and up the steps and passed into the outer court upon the rock. As they ran, they gathered a handful of stout swordsmen. There was a small postern door that opened in an angle of the burg wall on the west, where the cliff stretched out to meet it. On that side a narrow path ran around towards the great gate, between the wall and the sheer brink of the rock. Together Eomer and Aragorn sprang through the door, their men close behind. The swords flashed from the sheath as one. "Guthwina," cried Eomer, "Guthwina for the mark." "Andúril," cried Aragorn, "Andúril for the Dúnedain."
Charging from the side, they hurled themselves upon the wild men. Andúril rose and fell, gleaming with white fire. A shout went up from wall and tower. "Andúril! Andúril goes to war! The blade that was broken shines again!" Dismayed, the rammers let fall the trees and turned to fight. But the wall of their shields was broken as by a lightning stroke, and they were swept away, hewn down, or cast over the rock into the stony stream below. The orc archers shot wildly and then fled. For a moment Eomer and Aragorn halted before the gates. The thunder was rumbling in the distance now. The lightning flickered still, far off among the mountains in the south. A keen wind was blowing from the north again. The clouds were torn and drifting, and stars peeped out. And above the hills of the Coombe side the westering moon rode, glimmering yellow in the storm rack.
"We didn't come too soon," said Aragorn, looking at the gates. Their great hinges and iron bars were wrenched and bent.
Many of their timbers were cracked.
"Yet we can't stay here beyond the walls to defend them," said Aylmer. "Look," he pointed to the causeway.
Already a great press of orcs and men were gathered again beyond the stream. Arrows whined and skipped on the stones about them.
"Come, we must get back and see what we can do to pile stone and beam across the gates within. Come now."
They turned and ran.
At that moment some 2 dozen orcs, that had lain motionless among the slain, leapt to their feet and came silently and swiftly behind.
2 flung themselves to the ground at Aylmer's heels, tripped him, and in a moment they were on top of him. But a small dark figure that none had observed sprang out of the shadows and gave a hoarse shout.
"Baruch Khazad! Khazad I Menu!"
An axe swung and swept back. 2 orcs fell headless. The rest fled. Aylmer struggled to his feet, even as Aragorn ran back to his aid. The postern was closed again. The iron door was barred and piled inside with stones. When all was safe within, Aylmer turned.
"I thank you, Gimli, son of Gloin," he said. "I didn't know that you were with us in the sortie, but oft the unbidden guest proves the best company. How came you here?"
"I followed you to shake off sleep," said Gimli, "but I looked on the hillmen and they seemed over large for me, so I sat beside a stone to see your sword play."
"I shan't find it easy to repay you," said Aylmer.
"There may be many a chance ere the night is over," laughed the dwarf, "but I am content. Till now I've hewn naught but wood since I left Moria."
2, said Gimli, patting his axe.
He'd turned to his place on the wall.
2, said Legolas. "I've done better, though now I must grope for spent arrows. All mine are gone. Yet I make my tale 20 at the least. But that's only a few leaves in a forest."
The sky now was quickly clearing, and the sinking moon was shining brightly. But the light brought little hope to the riders of the Mark. The enemy before them seemed to have grown rather than diminished, and still more were pressing up from the valley through the breach. The sortie upon the rock gained only a brief respite. The assault on the gates was redoubled. Against the deeping wall the hosts of Isengard roared like a sea. Orcs and hillmen swarmed about its feet from end to end. Ropes with grappling hooks were hurled over the parapet, faster than men could cut them or fling them back. 100s of long ladders were lifted up. Many were cast down in ruin, but many more replaced them, and orcs sprang up them like apes in the dark forests of the south. Before the wall's foot, the dead and broken were piled like shingle in a storm. Ever higher rose the hideous mounds, and still the enemy came on. The men of Rohan grew weary. All their arrows were spent, and every shaft was shot. Their swords were notched, and their shields were riven. 3 times Aragorn and Aylmer rallied them, and 3 times Andúril flamed in a desperate charge that drove the enemy from the wall. Then a clamour arose in the deep behind. Orcs had crept like rats through the culvert through which the stream flowed out. There they had gathered in the shadow of the cliffs, until the assault above was hottest, and nearly all the men of the defence had rushed to the wall's top. Then they sprang out. Already some had passed into the jaws of the deep, and were among the horses, fighting with the guards. Down from the wall leapt Gimli with a fierce cry that echoed in the cliffs.
"Khazad! Khazad!"
He soon had work enough.
"Ay, oi!" he shouted. "The orcs are behind the wall. Ay, oi! Come, Legolas, there are enough for us both. Khazad, ay, Menu!"
Gambling the Old looked down from the Hornburg, hearing the great voice of the dwarf above all the tumult.
"The orcs are in the deep," he cried. "Helm, Helm, forth, Helmingas!"
He shouted as he leapt down the stair from the rock with many men of Westfold at his back. Their onset was fierce and sudden, and the orcs gave way before them. Ere long they were hemmed in the narrows of the gorge, and all were slain or driven shrieking into the chasm of the deep, to fall before the guardians of the hidden caves.
21, cried Gimli. He hewed a 2-handed stroke and laid the last orc before his feet. Now my count passes Master Legolas again.
We must stop this rat